Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio, that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
A good evening, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Springtime.
In the city.
In the city, yeah.
I'm here with my brewing brother, John Plisse, California Home Brewer of the Year.
I'm just drinking Justin's beer, and
that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Me too.
He must have bought it and put it in. He's cracked open the bottles.
Yeah.
That's why he had to leave the room to fill the glasses. That or he spit in them.
I took the label off.
That's his brewing process, is removing the label and opening the cap.
Hey, man, I figured everything else didn't work, so.
Yeah. He's trying some modified techniques for brewing. That's some good beer, Justin.
Damn fine good beer.
Damn, thank you. I never thought I'd be saying that.
It's your recipe.
It only took how many years?
Too many. I brewed Jameel's pale ale and did everything you said to do.
It doesn't taste like my pale ale at all. That's the interesting thing.
I would almost argue it's an ESB, but...
Well, you know what's going to be fun is that Doc brewed it as well, and I tasted his.
It'll be different.
And it is different, although it is very similar. You can tell that we used the same recipe.
Right.
So he's going to bring his in for a show, too. I've got a whole nother keg of this, so we'll all sit down and check it out.
I should have brewed it, too.
Be fun. Yeah, just to
see
the difference.
That would have been interesting, yeah. Because that's one of the things about the recipes that we give and all that. It's a starting point. You really should brew the recipes as we give them and go with those.
Go with them.
And, you know, try it exactly as is. And then once you've got that result, you know, start to modify your process from there or your recipe from there, you know, but, you know, you should at least brew them once because they're good recipes.
That is an excellent point, Jamil.
Right.
Regan Dillon, I was brewing all these weird beers and he goes, "Man, you just need to brew beer. Take a pour and brew a porter. You know, take a half, brew a half. Don't be adding like cherries and shit. You know, brew a fucking porter. You know, Mad Dog. I mean, sorry.
Yeah, he's great.
Brew a recipe.
Actually, you know, my Robust Porter recipe is really, you know, 99% is Regan and Chris Graham. I went in. I'm like, hey, you know, I want to brew this porter. I already brewed some porters. You know, and Chris's like, oh, let's ask Regan. He brews a lot of porters. How about, you know, Regan, how about a porter recipe? He's like, throw in this, throw in that. And then Chris tweaked it a little bit, and then I've tweaked it a little bit from that. But not much. And I tell you, you know, you could have just gone straight with what those guys said.
Yeah.
It would have been excellent. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys know their stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
What are we talking about? Today we're talking about,
English
Pale Ale, and actually the category is called English Pale Ale. This is interesting.
I wanted to talk about this because
ESB is, the name of, a product, a Fuller's product.
Right.
Nobody else calls their beer ESB.
Right.
You know, so they're generally called strong bitters. And, you know, so it's kind of an odd name. So the category is called Extra Special Strong Bitter English Pale Ale. But really,
Red Hook does it too.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, Red Hook ESB, that big old pyramid tap handle.
Right.
It's not that, it's okay, but.
Yeah. It's all right beer.
It's changed over the years. It's definitely watery, less malt. It's not as malty as it used to be.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how beers change and perceptions change. If you're used to drinking, you know, bigger beers all along, you know, for a couple of years, and you go back to something you thought was big before, all of a sudden it seems small.
Mm-hmm.
That might be part of it.
Or like the trend that homebrewers, they always go hop crazy in the beginning.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're hopped out and then they go to malty beers.
Right.
Just taste buds change over time.
Well, what's funny is I think a lot of people start out, they want a kind of a less bitter beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as homebrewers when they first start out, and then it only takes like 6 months to a year, and then they're brewing like IPAs, and they're like, I can't get enough of the hops. More hops. What style, what beer kit do you have with more hops?
I wanted a pound of hops. Yeah. 5 gallons.
Well, you know, you can just steer them towards the Pliny the Elder clone. Okay. You know, if you want hops, Pliny the Elder, Russian River Brewing.
Oh my God.
You know, that's fantastic. And the, you know, Vinny's so kind. He shared that recipe with everybody. And, you know, it makes a great beer. Oh man.
Yeah, it's mean.
If you want hops, that's the way to go. And everybody eventually wants lots of hops. And then, they tend to, like you're saying, they come back to kind of reality, and you know they bounce back and forth.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like
the malt.
Interesting.
I'm a great example of that. When I started brewing, hophead. I started brewing, and now I've really kind of reverted, kind of gone away from the hops quite a bit.
Yeah,
that's, and I was a,
everybody takes that same path.
I'm so proud of my hop headiness, and I've really kind of gone the other way.
Yeah. See, and I'm at the point now where. Yeah, sometimes I crave a more malty, less bitter, less hoppy beer, and then other times, you know, I gotta have my Pliny clone, and you know, slam me with one of those bad boys,
put you to bed.
Yeah, I went to pick up a motorhome.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I took the profits from the syndication of this show.
Right.
And went and got myself a motorhome up in,
good for you.
Just north of Santa Rosa.
See, all this knowledge is paying off
exactly.
now.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the checks keep rolling in. I didn't know what to do with all the money.
Right.
I'm not one for investing.
Right.
So I went and bought a motorhome.
Diesel.
Yeah, so Justin and I could, drive to, you know, GABF and NHC and places like that.
But he was talking really about the all organic kind of like mobilization.
Exactly.
Vegetable oil and.
On my way back. Here's Santa Rosa. Well, you know who's in Santa Rosa? Russian River Brewing. I have to stop by and have myself a pint or two of the Pliny.
There you go.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
So you have your motorhome, and now you have your boat. And your family.
Right. And the family. It's all just so I can spend more time with my kids. And I could spend time with my kids without this, but, you know, for their sake, instead of, like, them entertaining dad, likes to throw a few extra things in there so they have some fun, and we just have the greatest time doing stuff like this, and that's more important to me than anything. So, yeah, I went ahead and got a used motorhome with the massive profits from the syndication of the show, which is now heard on 113 stations nationwide.
There you go. Do you have hydraulics?
No, Jack. You mean like leveling?
Like doom.
No.
You know,
but I did go and buy some jacks today, 5,000 pounds apiece.
Oh wow!
And we'll jack that bad boy up and level it.
There you go.
So the coach won't be a rocking while Justin and I are in there enjoying our beer.
Yeah,
that's great.
I jacked it today. If that's the same thing.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Sorry.
All right. So we were talking about strong bitters.
Yeah. English pales.
So why don't you tell us about strong bitters, John?
Okay. Well, these beers are very, very malty. Dark gold to deep copper in color. Relatively bitter. These styles, I mean, ESP is usually, they're bittered up front. Not much flavoring or late hop additions. Medium malt aroma. Fair amount of caramel flavor coming through. There's definitely some nutty and, I have to say, biscuit flavor. I don't know how else to describe it, but there's definitely a malt biscuitiness.
Oh, absolutely.
Coming through.
There's
from
biscuit in every beer.
Yeah. Yeah. From the British malt, from the crystal malts, whatever you're using to get this
and
sweetness.
The biscuity is more prominent in all English beers. Absolutely.
Right. And you have to have this for this style.
Right.
Also, a fair amount of esters from the English yeast. Medium to high esters, a lot of noticeable hop flavor, maybe some hop aroma, but a fair amount of malt aroma too coming through. So it's definitely a balance. No diacetyl to little. Personally, me, I don't like any diacetyl in my beers. Also medium to low carbonation. You don't, this beer should be all about balance of maltiness, and you don't want it to be too over carbonated where it's kind of a bitey and it's just too sharp. You just want it to be a balance of bitterness and maltiness and a little bit of sweetness coming through.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very enjoyable beer. And I got a good story about this. I brewed more beers ESB like 5 years ago when I was first starting to brew. And I was having a band rehearsal with my buddy Ron. And this was my first successful extract batch that I could recall. And I liked it so much that I killed a Tapadraft bottle. Now, keep in mind, this is a gallon of Tapadraft. So I drank a gallon of this ESB to my head while we're having band practice. But that is when
what
I realized
band practice. I play a fucking song.
Yeah. I was so ripped, but I was so happy.
I don't care about my guitar.
I broke the guitar and threw it. But I was so happy that I brewed a good beer, and it was flavorful. But this ESB kit was so freaking hilarious. Well, hilarious, but it was so good. It was just, and I just remember just thankful that I had that gallon in my belly.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's the thing. When you brew really good beer.
Yeah. It's just something, you're proud of that. You made that with your own hands, you know,
And then you get drunk, you pass out.
You stare at the stars and you feel
invincible. Throw up on your shoes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about my shoes.
It's all about the beer. But anyways. The best version of this beer I've actually had was Russian River. It's a very good ESP.
Mm-hmm.
Also Anderson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
They have going to get an ESP.
Mm-hmm.
Fuller's is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the signature of the style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a little different. You go over to England and, there's a whole range. That's the one thing about this style versus, ordinary bitter and special bitter and the, strong bitter is they're all related in a way. And, they're three different strength levels. But, the thing is, there's such a wide variety of flavors and fermentation characters and things like that going on in these beers.
Mm-hmm.
When you get over there, it is night and day between two beers. It's not like it's kind of that way here with different pubs and American pale ales, but you know, a lot of times it's like, well, that's a bad American pale ale. That's a good one. But you go over there and there's so many great English bitters of all these ranges, and you go and taste, you know, somebody's strong bitter at one place and somebody's strong bitter at another place. They're two totally different beers. I mean, they're radically different, but they're also kind of the same. Hmm. I mean, it's so interesting how the variety of flavors and aromas and happen in this beer.
You've been there.
Still.
I mean, are a lot of these breweries, are they using similar grain, similar hops?
Yeah.
And, I mean, are they using similar recipes to a point? I mean.
Yeah. And a lot of these recipes have been, like 150 years ago, our father Jonathan Plisset, set up the brewery and, did this recipe and we've maintained it, steadfastly, all these years and, but, a lot of it's fermentation, Burton Unions, things like that, that make a big difference. Talk about diacetyl, big difference in a lot of these beers. There's some differences there from that, but, it's very interesting how they differ, along the lines of these beers. And Fuller's is a good example, but it's kind of, almost unique. Well, and all of them are quite unique. Mm. And again, kind of a range of levels of these different beers. One of the things I love about these English beers, these English strong beers, is they tend to give them unusual names. I call mine Programmer's Elbow.
Programmer's Elbow.
Right, because they got like a fiddler's elbow.
Tennis elbow.
Yeah, because, if you do like a lot of computer programming, which I've done in my lifetime, you end up with tendonitis and all sorts of different parts of your arm, and it's just so painful that the only thing you can do at the end of the day is, have a couple of pints and, it makes it feel better. Well, they got like a Bishop's Finger. That's actually quite a good beer.
Yeah.
Old Speckled Hen, I love that. Fiddler's Elbow.
Hmm.
Monkey Fist.
I like that one.
That's a good one. Saluting the Bishop. That's a good one. Okay. Shaking Hands with Mr. Lincoln. That's one of my favorites.
That's awesome.
Choking the Chicken. Various.
Yeah, I know that one.
There.
I mean, no.
there's a whole range of these. They got all sorts of unusual names. When we look at the beer culture here in the U.S. and we think, all these creative names and stuff, they've been doing it in England forever. And they've got these great pub names and things like that, fantastic.
So the English humor definitely kind of crossed to their brewing too.
Yeah. And some of them actually have like some meaning, it's not meant in a rude way. It's meant, it's like got some historic context to it.
That's great.
You know, except for maybe shaking hands with Mr. Lincoln. That's a very American-centric Civil War era, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
Maybe Civil War era beer. Civil War. Yeah. Yes, I remember that brewery well.
All right. We're going to take a break, right?
Yeah.
When we come back here, talk about ingredients.
Sounds good.
All right.
This summer, an Imperial caliber event will change the face of live beer radio forever. If you attend one beer event this year, make it the GABF. But if you attend two, it better be the Brewing Network Anniversary Party, baby. The Brewing Network Anniversary Party at the Bistro in Hayward, California, USA, planet Earth. Great beer, great surprises, great Scott.
Augustina Barini.
Visit thebrewingnetwork.com for more details. Live Beer Radio, The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
This is the Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking English Strong Bitters.
Yeah, we are.
Which people call ESBs, or they call them English Pale Ales, or Extra Special. Or
now, would these be considered a pale ale for the English? And I mean, the American versions are hoppier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there a cross in between the two?
You know, American pale ales came kind of from English pale ales.
Uh-huh.
People starting to brew them, and then they started using, you know, more American ingredients, and they made them hoppier and hoppier and hoppier, especially here on the West Coast. They're really hoppy. And, you know, that's one of the things about the English bitters or pale ales. They are not hoppy at all. Okay, so you may get some slight hop flavor in them. You'll certainly get some bitterness, but they're not nearly as bitter. They're not nearly as hop flavorful, and they don't have any real, very slight hop aroma, if any. And you compare that to American pale ales, where there's tends to be significant hop aroma and hop flavor, and they tend to be, you know, quite bitter for the entire balance of the beer. On an English strong bitter, you've got some malt, but you've got some bitterness to back it. It tends to be a very balanced beer. All the English beers tend to be. Even when you're going down to the ordinary bitter, it might be, you know, a little more in the bitter balance. But again, it's closer to balance. And I think one of the mistakes a lot of American-based brewers do is they look at the word bitter, and they bitter the snot out of it, to where it's so darn bitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're expecting this really bitter beer, and it's more balanced. It's balanced slightly to the bitter side,
right?
But it's not hugely bitter. They call them bitter because they're not, you know, sweet, or because they're not, you know, milds. So
that's the toughest thing to explain to a new brewer. Well, why is it called English Special Bitter?
Bitter, yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Is it bitter? I don't like
that's
bitter
not
beers.
Bitter.
And I,
well, it's you not know, bitter. It's malty,
less bitter than a lot of American beers.
It's just a name.
Yeah. So you know, that's one of the things that people need to keep in mind. And then, you know, like you're saying, it's got that biscuity, toasty, nutty, malty, you know, background. But again, balanced with the bitter, balanced with you know, some esters from fermentation. You know, one of the critical things, you cannot make this beer without an English style yeast. So you've got to get that English fermentation character in there.
Right.
If you don't, You know, it's not any sort of English beer at all. So, you know, it's critical on all those English beers to use an English yeast. You can't use an American yeast at, like, you know, high temperature or anything like that. I really don't think that works.
Now, what's a good temp for an English strain usually? Mid-60s? 65 to 70, somewhere in there?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly, 65 to 70. I tend to target almost always 67 degrees
right.
for all of my English beers. At least, you know, in the bigger beers, I will start out there and then ramp them up towards the end,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure I'm getting a nice, good attenuation. You know, I tend to do the same thing on a lot of American beers, a lot of American yeast.
Mm. You definitely don't want to get above 70, though. It's too... Would it be too yeah. fruity and fusel-y?
Yeah, especially in the stronger beers, you tend to get a real solventy alcohol.
Mm.
And that tends to be when it gets up to around 72 Fahrenheit and above. It tends to be a bit too much. Mm. So, you know, you hold it around, you know, 68 degrees, 20 degrees C, and, you know, that's a good target for this, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, too hot, like you're saying, it ends
not
up
good.
Yeah, hot solventy.
Hmm.
Exactly. All right, let's see here.
A little recipe here. Yeah, what do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
A little something, something here.
Yeah. Okay. All I know is I'm out of beer.
All right. What else was I going to talk about? All right. Hop flavor. Talked about that, and see, we actually have notes for this show.
I have a question too, but
we actually have prep. Jonathan's got pages of prep. He's got times. He's got, you know, notes. He's got the whole thing there.
I spilled my dinner on my notes too. Sorry.
I actually have notes too. We actually do some work for this show, which is why we get the big bucks and can buy the motorhomes.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
All the dollars you guys are paying. And buy the book that's coming out.
Because God knows he needs it.
I'm the hoe here.
Yeah.
We're coming out with a book due in the fall, Brewing Classic Styles, 80 award-winning recipes anyone can brew.
Right.
Find it at your local homebrew shop or buy it at beertown.org. See, buy it from beertown.org. I get more money that way.
There you go. You need to do like a brew-off competition?
I just need people to buy the book. Or send me money.
Send me donation.
Your family, kids. Yeah.
I got an RV now.
I think I got like braces all around, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
College, things to worry about.
Yeah.
How many kids do you have? I got to put gas in the RV.
How many kids do you have?
Two.
Okay.
If I said 10, you do you think people would send
like
me more?
Two or three? Or
I was thinking if I said 10, maybe people would send me more money.
Right.
Okay. Buy more books.
I'll buy it.
Right. I'm just such a commercial hoe.
Will you sign it for me?
Absolutely. I'll give him my imprint of love.
Yeah. I want a kiss with lipstick on it.
You bet.
All right, thanks.
Bye. I'll do that.
Okay.
I guarantee I'll do that.
I know you will.
Going to do it. Oh, sorry, everybody. So this beer, it's going to have starting gravity of 1056. It's going to be, you're starting out with, you're going to finish with 6 gallons in the boil kettle, and then you're going to rack 5.5 of it to the fermenter, and you're going to have 5 finished gallons in your bottling bucket or keg. 1056 to start, finishing gravity around 1015, 40 IBUs, color of about 8 SRM. It ends up with about 5.4% alcohol by volume. And for you extract brewers, you're going to put, you need to use English pale ale extract for the beer.
You need that base malt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't make it with, you know, domestic to, or, you know, whatever your light extract is. That stuff's fine, but for this kind of beer, like Jonathan was saying, you need to have some biscuity, kind of toasty, grainy kind of character in there, and the English pale malt is going to give you that background note, and you really need that. You're going to use 8.6 pounds of liquid malt extract. That's about 3.9 kilograms. Of the English pale ale extract. For you all grain brewers, you're going to use 12 pounds or 5.44 kilograms of a British pale ale malt, and you're going to mash at about 152 degrees Fahrenheit or 67 degrees C. And that's going to give you, you know, your average Tupperwort, but that English pale malt critical to English styles.
Oh, yeah.
I think first and foremost is you need an English type yeast.
Oh yeah.
Second most important on this is you need an English type base malt. Third most important is going to be an English type hop.
Hmm.
Let me go across the rest of the grains. So you can use some Crystal 15, about a half pound or 227 grams. And you use Crystal 120 or about for a quarter pound or 113 grams. And the hops, you need English hops. Use pellet hops, 5% alpha acid for 60 minutes. You're going to use 2 ounces or 57 grams. That's going to give you nearly 40 IBUs.
It's pretty bitter.
Yeah, yeah. Considering, you know, it's not that big a beer, you know, it's 40 IBUs. The English yeast is going to leave a little residual sweetness mm-hmm. behind. And that is going to help to cut some of the bitterness. Now, 40 IBUs, that's like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale type of bitterness, right? But Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is very dry beer.
Right.
That attenuates really low, and that dryness allows the bittering to come through.
Right.
This is going to have a little residual sweetness because you're using this English yeast. And we're using an English yeast that doesn't attenuate too highly, and that's the difference there. So let's see. You have a 60-minute addition, 2 ounces, 57 grams. And then you have Kent Goldings again, pellet hops, 5% alpha acid at 0 minutes. You're going to add an ounce, 28 grams.
So there's a fair amount of bittering then. And not much late hop additions. And
right.
Like
well, an ounce, that's pretty substantial. That's probably pushing the boundaries of this style.
Okay.
And, you know, this style tends to have a little more hop aroma than right. some of the other hop flavor than the special bitter or the ordinary bitter.
Right.
So, you know, it's acceptable. It'll work out all right. I wouldn't go past that.
Okay.
I think this is kind of like hitting the limit on it.
What do you think of Challenger as a bittering hop?
I think that's excellent.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's an excellent English bittering hop.
Right. But and bittering specifically.
Yeah. I wouldn't use it for flavor. In my English IPA recipe, I use Challenger.
Okay.
And that's a good point. That really is because the hop character from your bittering additions do come through in the final beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you're making a German beer, you're going to want to use a German hop to do your bittering. If you're making American beer, you use an American hop to do your bittering.
Right.
If you're doing an English beer, use an English hop to do your bittering.
Right.
Because that flavor will come through. You know, you can use something like Kent Goldings in this case, or you can use Challenger, like you're saying. And generally, when it's a higher IBU beer, I like to use Challenger for my English beers. Because it does tend to, carry a good English flavor that people will recognize, especially in these types of beers, and you know, you don't have as quite a wild a hop mass in there because it's a higher alpha acid hop. But and I think one of the other things is, especially on the English hops, I would use pellet hops all the time. I think
always.
I think
fresher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they retain their freshness a lot longer than the whole hops. Whole hops are fine, like, you know, early on, but they die quick.
Yeah.
All right. After the break, we can get into the yeast and the fermentation, and we'll be right back.
Did you know that you can not only order from More Beer online at morebeer.com and receive free shipping on most orders over $59, but you can also shop in person at their 2 retail locations located in Concord and Riverside, California. In fact, the Concord facility has grown to over 15,000 square feet to fit all the new products, expanded showroom, and new Knowledge Center classroom. And now, in conjunction with the Brewing Network, More Beer is making it easier than ever to keep up on what's happening. Download the More Beer monthly podcast by clicking podcast at morebeer.com. You'll learn about More Beer's history, sales and discounts on More Beer products, get to know team members, and hear ways to save you money. They're also launching a brand new website soon with more features and a better online shopping experience. So go to morebeer.com or call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Ah, I feel good. I knew that I would not.
Now, back to the Jameel
Show. I feel
show.
Good. I knew that I would not. So good.
Can you believe Justin's checking out the size of my segment during the break?
Well, I can believe it. Yeah. You should see what else he checks out. But I'm good.
I wonder why he was crawling around out of there. He said it's cable check.
Cable check.
Yeah, I don't know why he's crawling around out of the console here.
Some professionalism out of you.
Well, the problem is,
it's good
I got a whole bunch of emails from people going, hey, love it when you have a few beers before the show.
Yeah. Did you really?
Yeah.
People think you lighten up a little?
Yeah, and nobody complained. And I got like no negatives. I got all positives, when we like got totally ripped.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, a couple of beers,
Yeah. When you get buzzed, you're really witty and funny.
The rest of the time?
I always think so. Like, the more I drink,
this beer style is supposed to be like this.
The more witty and funny I become, the more attractive I become also. Yeah. I'm quite handsome the more I drink. Clearly.
Your wife agrees.
I become witty. I become intelligent. I become quite well-spoken with every beer.
I'm sure you become.
I don't know why that is. I think everyone ought to give that experiment a try.
There's the power in beer.
Yeah.
Are we having fun yet?
Yes.
We're having fun.
I am.
Yeah, we are.
Mm. All right, so we're talking about English strong bitters. And for yeast, I was mentioning earlier, is you got to use an English style yeast. Whatever you can use all sorts of different styles of English yeast, but it must be because they're very unique in the flavors and aromas that they get from fermentation. In this case, I like something that has a little less attenuation, doesn't make quite as dry a beer. And I use the White Labs WLP002 English Ale Yeast or the Y Yeast 1968 London ESB Yeast or Fermentis Saffale SO4.
There you go.
And I'm a big proponent of the liquid yeasts. I really don't tend to use the dry yeast.
Why is that? What have you found? I mean,
I've just gotten so used to the high quality of the liquid yeast.
Right.
The dry yeast is high quality, but again, the flavor profile is slightly different. And maybe in this beer it's not as big a deal. But on, I've brewed every style, BJCP style. And during that process, there's only a handful of different strains of dry yeast. So you tend to use all liquid yeast for all those. I mean, you can kind of force some dry yeast in there. And nothing wrong with dry yeast. And maybe in this beer it's good. But, I've gotten so used to using the liquid yeast and the quality is so high of those products that, that's all I use. Mm-hmm. And I think, if you're just starting out brewing and you are learning the process, this is your first few brews.
Go with the dry.
Definitely go with dry yeast to start out with. Until you can just get the basic process down. Then start looking at liquid yeast.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is there more cell count in a dry yeast package?
Generally, it just depends on what you're talking about. Now, the liquid yeast tubes, vials and the packages, the XL pack that Y-Yeast does and the vial that White Labs does, those are about the same amount of yeast as a 5-gram dry yeast package.
Okay. So they're pretty comparable.
Comparable.
Sure.
If you go with what the dry yeast means, if you're not rehydrating.
Right, and you're just pouring it in.
Yeah. You're getting about half of what you get out of a liquid yeast package.
Oh, okay.
Half or less. So that's about half of what you get in a liquid yeast package.
So definitely hydrate then.
You want to properly rehydrate the yeast. Or you can go to like an 11-gram package.
Pitch two.
Right, or 2 5-gram packages. Okay. Yeah. And then you're getting about the same as a liquid yeast pack.
I've had a lot of homebrewers talk about there seems to be less lag time with dry yeast than there is a liquid yeast.
Well, they tend to be stuffing a whole lot more yeast in there.
Okay.
And, if you go with what the dry yeast manufacturers say, they'll say, oh, yeah, there's like 6 to 10 billion viable cells in a package.
Right.
Well, if you weigh out a gram of dry yeast, which I've done multiple times because I could not understand this, there's 20 billion cells in there in a gram of dry yeast in your average size of dry yeast. Clayton Cohn says the same thing. He said, 20 billion cells in a gram of dry yeast. Whether they're all viable or not, I think the dry yeast manufacturers are saying, lowest common denominator, it's the package is sitting out hot on the shelf or something. oh, it's going to be like 6 billion, 8 billion, 10 billion is what all these guys say.
What do you think about, does dry yeast have to be refrigerated or can it be kept at room temperature?
Yes, needs to be refrigerated, not frozen.
Okay.
So.
That is the viability to decrease in a dry yeast if it's kept in a dry environment and it's
in
not
a warm environment?
A warm environment, sorry.
Yes, okay. Yes. It degrades much faster. If you keep it nice and cold, like 32, 34 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 to 2 degrees C.
Right.
It'll last about a year or so.
Okay.
And, with a pretty good viability, if you rehydrate it properly in the right kind of environment, you get very good numbers out of it. So, some background on that.
It's good to know.
But so I tend to go for the liquid yeast cultures, and I think fermentation is critical, especially you want to do all these styles that we're talking about. You want to get into the 80 different styles, beer styles, and then ciders and meads. The liquid yeasts are great, and learning how to properly handle them, excellent. If you're the occasional brewer and you're really not into doing all that, you can make great beer with dry yeast. Right. There's nothing really wrong with dry yeast. It's just that it's going to limit you in the styles of beer you can make.
Right.
And that's a critical thing. So
true that.
When you're starting out, do the dry yeast and then roll over into the liquid yeast. Once you master that part of the process, you can start focusing on the yeast. Very important. All right. So in this beer, you'd use maybe like 11 grams of properly rehydrated dry yeast, or two liquid yeast packages, or you can make a starter. Ferment at 68 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 degrees C, and when you finished, you're going to carbonate this beer to about 1.5 to 2 volumes.
So it's definitely lower.
Oh yeah, and that's again really important in English beers.
Is that just the quaffability of it, or is it?
That's because I said so.
Fair enough. Good show.
I think we're done. especially in the lower gravity beers, if you're doing something like an ordinary bitter, you want like 1 to 1.5 volumes. Mm. And then you kind of creep up from there as the beer strength goes up. It can take a little more CO2. Mm. And like you and I always talk about, carbonation is critical in a beer. And it radically changes the character of the beer. Oh, more CO2 or less CO2, it can go from being a great beer to not so good a beer to a horrible beer.
Right.
High or low.
Right.
And so you want to kind of dial in that range. And on this beer, a softer carbonation tends to, really kind of enhance the beer. And you serve it a little warmer. So the carbonation.
50 degrees, 45?
Around the 50 to 55 degrees.
Okay.
What happens is that warmth tends to help the CO2 come out a little faster, mm-hmm. giving you a little more perception of that and driving more of the aromatics, allowing you to taste the flavors better. There's a big difference in tasting beer. One of the things I used to do that I haven't anymore because everybody gave me such crap about it was I used to take a thermometer with me to take the temperature of the beers I was judging, mm-hmm. because a beer at, 40 degrees versus a beer at 45 or 50 degrees is a totally different beer. And, when I was, getting my results, I wish I could know what the judge's temperature of the beer was, because they're reporting things that either I never would have thought, or, they're missing things, so either the beer was too cold or too warm, it wasn't at the right serving temperature.
Right. And that definitely affects the judging panel.
Yeah, and it's very difficult for competitions have the beers exactly at the right temperature. And, so it's up to the judges to, I would check a beer, see what temperature it's at. If it's really cold, I'm judging, English bitters and it's 40 degrees, I'd hold it in my hands, warm it up until it got up into about 50 degrees. And then I'd try it and I'm like, okay, now it tastes like an ordinary bitter or whatever. Hmm. So temperature, you serve a little warmer, a little lower carbonation, and that makes all the difference in the world.
I think that applies to all beer in general, too.
Oh, yeah.
I love when all my beers warm up at about 50 degrees.
Right.
I like to drink them slowly, but you just seem to get more of the malt flavor from a beer. A lager or a porter, whatever it is. It just seems to open up more.
More of a progression. Well, right. But the interesting thing about this all is, and when I work on competitions, I tend to have ice in ice chests and put the beers on ice and stuff, and just say, the beer's too cold, beer's too cold. It's like, the rooms tend to get really hot because there's a lot of bodies in a little room, and it tends to really warm up. Well, instead of having these, you know, 60-degree beers, I'd rather the beers be 40 degrees and the judges warm them up. Because once you pour them into a cup, you can warm it in a matter of a minute with your hands.
Right.
You can get into the right temperature range.
Right.
And so I'd rather it was a little too cold to start with. Same thing, I like to pour myself a pint cold and let it warm up a little bit over time and, you know, take my time to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
As it warms up. If it starts out too warm, you really gotta knock that thing back. Which is okay if it's like a lower English beer.
Best bitter, yeah.
Yeah. Best bitter or a special bitter or a ordinary bitter or a mild or something like that.
Mm.
Yeah, you can knock down a pint pretty quick or a dry stout, things like that. Yeah.
You make a pretty good mild.
I've
had your mild.
Yeah, I like that mild. Mm-hmm. When it warms up a little bit, you know, real low carbonation, you know, it's a little warmer. You can just slide a pint back, pretty easy.
Yeah. I had a question earlier about, the guidelines always talk about a hint of diacetyl in these styles. Mm-hmm. And it always seems like to be acceptable in English style beers.
Any English beer, yeah.
Now, why is that for just these styles in this region that diacetyl is accepted in English beers? Because, I mean, you're talking about, you know, they had the Burton Union system and the reason yeast a lot, you know.
Yorkshire squares and things like that.
I've never been there. I don't know the history, but I'm just wondering, are they getting cross-contamination going on? Is the yeast getting weird on them?
No, it comes from the yeast. So pretty much all yeast produce diacetyl.
Sure.
And it's tends to be based on fermentation temperature. It all has to do with the respiration and, yeast growth and the initial precursors to diacetyl. There are other things that'll cause diacetyl, but what tends to happen in the English beers is they tend to ferment very quickly and get them in casks and things. And traditionally, they would ferment it over, you know, a couple of days, 2-3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes into a cask while it's still kind of live. You know, live beer is, you know, real ale.
Is that oak? Oaked then?
Well, not necessarily. Okay. They'd be lined with brewer's pitch or now they're, stainless.
Okay.
And, while the beer is still live and then they would add like, you know, a little dosage to, you know, for carbonation and they bung it up and, they add like a plug of hops to, add a little hopping to it and then it's served on cask. And when you tend to do that, what happens is, with these beers, when you ferment them fairly warm, and the English yeast especially, are, you know, prone to producing some diacetyl. And if you ferment them warm in the 68 degree range, it's a fairly warm beer, and, you stop the fermentation early, the diacetyl is, you know, part of the process of, getting to, alcohol. Or, you know, acetaldehyde. And, you're going to end up with, a bit of diacetyl in that beer. And, you know, trying to rush the beer through like they tend to do or, you know, go for fresh beer. And, you know, from brewery to, you know, serving it in the pub is, you know, like a week or less.
Right. So there will always be some traces.
You tend to get some traces. But, you know, I'll tell you, you know, it's only, I think, from our, super clean lager mentality, American lager mentality we have here in this country, that we don't want diacetyl. We don't want any flavor at all.
Right.
And I think a touch of diacetyl in an English beer is a wonderful thing.
Sure.
You know, it shouldn't be so strong that the beer tastes buttery.
Right. But it's a hint. It's like almost a malty flavor.
Yeah, a hint. Yeah. It rounds it out.
Right.
It tends to add an interesting dimension to it.
Mm.
And, diacetyl, you know, or buttery along with the caramel tends to be like toffee, tends to be like, you know, it really does, in the grand scheme of things, work well.
Mm-hmm.
Some beers are going to have a little more. Some are going to have less. Sometimes you get beers and they're just like really boldly full of butter. Mm-hmm. That can be too much. But, you know, a little background note, I like it. And some judges may not like it, but it really is part of the style. It's not a huge, bold part of the style, but a subtle note to the beers.
What about in the style of the yeast of specialty grains, the importance of your Carestand or your Caraminix, and just to get that malty sweetness. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but the use, I mean, one for coloring and one for that, just that malty flavor coming through, you know, Carestand's great. I love Carestand.
Uh-huh.
It's like 30 Levibon, but it's just adds a lot to a beer.
Right.
And the malty flavor coming through. Now in this style, how do you think the importance is for
Well, yeah,
balance, especially grains.
Well, you definitely need that. You know, you need some character in there from that. Because if you just go plain English malt, it's not going to be enough.
Right.
So you need some caramelly notes. You need some toasty notes, mm-hmm. and you need some of those darker crystal type of things going on.
I mean, you mentioned Crystal 120 in your recipe. Mm-hmm. I mean, that. What do you think that adds to your beer?
Well, it's almost like raisins or almost toasted raisins. Actually, one of my favorites is 150 Love, where it's a little more like a burnt raisin cookie. Actually, I have something there's a German Rost malt, and if you just do a search in German Rost malt, you're going to come up with like a German type of chocolate, like a pale German chocolate,
mm-hmm.
200 Love. But there's a Mustdorfer Rost malt, which is a 200 Lovemon crystal.
Wow.
And I've never seen another 200 Lovemon crystal anywhere in my life.
Have you ever used it?
Oh, yeah. And actually, my traditional bock, it has that Mustdorfer Rost. And I can't get rid of it now. You know, I can't pull it out of the recipe. And I was trying to buy some pale chocolate, and somebody sent me a sack of this. I had like 55 pounds. I'm using like 2 ounces at a time. But, you know, so it's going to take me a while to work through that 55-pound sack. But it's like my mother used to make these special cookies with raisins in them that this friend of hers really loved, and she would make them every time she came up to visit. And the raisins, some of the raisins tended to float to the top of the cookies.
Right.
And these cookies are baked quite hard, almost like biscotti.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And so the raisins would become really baked and really caramelized and toasted. And it's almost to the point where they're almost burnt.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And this malt is exactly like that, the taste of those raisins in that cookie.
It's bizarre.
I was having it the other night. I grabbed a few grains. And taste it. I'm like, yeah, that is exactly what it is.
Memories. Nothing but memories. That's great.
But
that was that good.
Oh, yeah. And that brings up another point. You know, as I digress, which, you know,
sure,
beer
talk to me.
Makes me attractive. Intelligent.
I can tell
well spoken.
Already.
Right. And it makes me digress.
Digress, yeah.
And it
very important.
Source. Right. But almost every, when you taste beer, those flavors you taste are flavors that, you know, the descriptors you apply to that beer, and those flavors and aromas and textures and all that are things that you had earlier in your life. So foods you had, you know, the time on the toilet where you didn't make the Mr. Potty, baby's first potty.
Right. You remember those flavors.
Those flavors and aroma.
Right.
You know, those aromas, they all, you know.
It kind of cross into beer.
Justin's riveted by our conversation.
That's what's wrong with Justin.
Well, no, you know, all those things, and so one of the things you need to do as a beer aficionado
mm-hmm.
is go have some wine, go have, you know, some, you know, different foods.
Mm-hmm.
Go, you know, try the vegan option on something. Try, you know, if you're a vegan, try the steak option.
Yes.
Try different things and really focus on those flavors and textures and aromas and, you know, take in the experience and kind of catalog it and experience it. When you go for a walk in the park and you stop to smell the roses.
Remember.
Well, you know, what exactly is that?
Right.
You know, think about that. Think about, you know, do the yellow roses have a different aroma than the pink roses?
Right.
Does the, you know, what does the pine tree smell like? What are the, you know, what is the fresh mowed grass versus grass that hasn't been mowed recently?
Yeah.
When it rains, I can tell when it's gonna rain. You know, so far I can smell it in the air.
You can,
I'm like, you know, oh, it's raining, you know, and people are like, well, you know, my family, like, no, it's not. I'm like, no, it's raining like a mile or two from me here.
You can smell it.
It's coming.
It's a cement.
I can smell it. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the release of the aromas from the cement when the water hits it. Absolutely.
Isn't that weird how that it'll bring back a memory?
Right.
Though?
Right. But you know exactly what I'm talking about. So when you're tasting beers and when you're judging beers and any beer judges listening to this, you know, those are, you know, you need to catalog those things. Try not to be, you know, so specific that it's like, you know, the side of, you know, the wildflowers on this mountain, you know, or, you know, that mountain. But, you know, you know, wet concrete, you know, in a, you know, fresh rainstorm or fresh cut grass, things like that. That means something to almost everybody.
Sure.
And, you know, you catalog those things, and you write them down when you're evaluating a beer. And then the brewer, you want to use terms that the brewers can understand, you know, that they'll be from, not that they have trouble understanding, but that they might be familiar with. Yeah, right. Somebody, you know, on the East Coast, if you give them some West Coast reference.
Yeah.
You know, and they may never have been on the West Coast. Yeah. You know, try and give them a universal reference, like, you know, fresh mown grass or, you know, melting snow or, you know, whatever, flowers, you know, sea coast, you know, sea air, things like that. You know, they all have very...
Dirty panties.
Dirty panties.
Sorry.
That sounds really good right now.
That's one of my favorite English beers as well, strong bitter.
Strong beer?
Dirty panty beer.
Dirty panty beer. We think about dry hopping dirty panties.
Oh man.
Never mind. Sorry.
No. This is getting kind of disgusting. Can we end the show?
Yeah.
All right.
What's good next?
Show. Yeah, what yeah. What's our next show?
Blondale. You guys are doing Blondies.
Blondies.
Yeah. Speaking of dirty panties, you're doing Blondale.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah.
I got a great Blondale on tap right now.
Oh, cool. Bring it down.
Fixing up the motorhome and had myself a couple of pints. Ended up laying down in the bed in the motorhome.
Passed out. With a Blondale in your hand?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
That was really good.
Good for you.
All right. Good show, John.
You too. Cheers.
Bruce Strong.
Yeah, Bruce Strong.
All right. We'll see you in 2 weeks with the Blondale Show, the Jameel Show, right here on the Brewing Network.
The Jameel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jameel to Jameel@thebrewingnetwork.com.